This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there.
Good morning, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and standing in line, I think it's some coffee over here before the morning show, but I got Sean Pop with me, and hey, Doc, Doc Easy just walking by, and so you're fiddling around, and, oh, good morning, first of all, Sean.
Good morning.
You're fiddling around with a Rubik's Cube, and you're saying you could do it in
about 52 seconds. Yeah. Is my average.
And you're trying to beat that time.
Yeah, working on various techniques to be able to speed up my time, try to get it down to around 30 seconds.
So you're saying actually that there is a trick to it. It's the memorization of 110 algorithms, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, there's you learn to recognize patterns, and then you apply an appropriate algorithm or a series of moves to basically solve that section of the pattern. Mm-hmm. And then you repeat that. You look for another pattern that you recognize and apply the algorithm and go from there.
And you said actually there are just probably four basic ones that you should learn to begin with?
Yeah, I believe it's four or five basic ones when you're first learning the basic method. But then for speed, I use the method, the F2L method, so that it just means I'm solving two layers at a time. And so that's where a lot more algorithms come into play. So the 110 or so algorithms come into play. But I really only use about 20 of those algorithms if I would ever get around to memorizing the other 90. Yeah. I would be a lot faster. I'd probably be able to hit that 30-second mark.
Now, do you do it just for yourself, or do you do it like in contests or as a magic trick? Or?
I don't do it in contests. I'm certainly not fast enough for that.
Because those guys are doing like 7 or 8 seconds.
Yeah, about 7 seconds. I think 7 seconds is the record.
That takes...
Let's see, where was I did start putting it into my show, and I've continued to let the routine evolve. I came up with a concept, and so now it's just a matter of trying to put that concept into play. So I played around with a few different ideas, and so Carl Hine and Stephen Brundage have been huge helps. They're kind of the masters at the cube right now. Gregory Wilson. Stephen is around 20 seconds, so he's very good. Gregory Wilson was one of the first inspirations for solving the cube, and so
I didn't know that Gregory was into the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah,
also, that's interesting.
So
that's pretty cool. You enjoying the convention?
Absolutely, it's so much fun. It's like vacation with all your best friends,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you get tired of talking to one best friend, the other one's right behind
you. You turn around and there's another one right there. Yeah, you don't get far. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And you were instrumental in working with Carl Andrews, and actually you're a technical guy for show cues. And is that still selling well? That is kind of the basic thing that most magicians should be using or are using.
Yeah, that's what we think anyway.
I love it.
I think it is still steadily moving forward. We have a brand new version coming out that's in beta right now. It's going to be a universal version, which means you will no longer have to buy two versions based on what device you're using. One app will work on all the devices. And that'll be a free upgrade. So if anybody out there has the iPhone version or really wants to upgrade to an iPad, they don't have to buy the iPad version separately. As soon as they update with the free update, it will then fit on the iPad and vice versa. So that's a huge thing. And we have a few new... we have a whole new design on the layout. We have a few, just kind of user interface things that we fixed and a couple new features that we put in. We're really excited about one key feature, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's going to be really cool.
It'll be out before Christmas. It'll be like a Christmas upgrade.
It literally will be out any day. We've gone through probably 15 rounds of beta.
Yeah.
And creating this universal version, we literally had to create it from scratch. So it's going back and going, oh, what did we forget? Did we forget anything? And fixing something, sending it out to beta, having testers check it out, and then report back. And,
yeah.
You know, we thought we were there, and just yesterday we discovered one thing and put up a new beta and sent that out. So we're literally, you know, 99% there. It should be out. And then it's just, it only takes about a week for Apple to approve it.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah, we're excited about it. It's a nice update.
Well, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hope you have a continued good convention.
Thank you.
And what is your magic word, by the way? What's important to you? What's your life philosophy?
Astonishment.
That's right.
Yeah, that's my word.
Sean. The Magic Word Podcast with Sean Pop. Scotty out.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more.
Well, good morning, Scott Wells from the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me one of the presenters from Magic Live yesterday, David Diebel.
Hey there, Dave.
Morning. And you did a fine job, certainly, and I liked the way that you kind of kept things going a little bit with a couple of jokes and gags and everything, but then also to have talked about, from your heart, something that was a topic that was interesting. I mean, it kind of went in a different direction than I think that some people were going, where you kind of opened yourself up and were talking about your personal experience.
Yeah, I knew it was real, that I was going to be doing it. When I had to submit the liner notes, or the lecture notes a couple weeks ago, I thought, well, I better stick to the plan here, because this is going, you know, this is what I got to talk about. So, but it was great, you know.
We want to explain that, so this way the people kind of know.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I hadn't given the talk to a group of magicians before, and I hadn't given the talk to anybody except maybe a couple times. So, but, you know, it's fine. I did my act first, so, you know, it had the rapport. It wasn't as if I just went out there and gave a talk. That would have been much more difficult to do it without, you know, performing.
Knowing your character.
Bits, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it wasn't really that difficult in that sense. The main thing was just memorizing the material. It's actually easy because you don't have to get a laugh every 8 seconds.
Yeah.
You can just talk. And so, yeah, I enjoyed it. And hopefully.
But the thing that you were talking about, getting around to that, I was going to say, is which that you had had injured yourself riding a unicycle to begin with.
Yeah, I talked about an injury I received, which caused my arm to develop this neurological problem, so I couldn't do any conventional juggling anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started coming up with things like rolling the billiard ball on my head and juggling plastic grocery bags that fall very slowly. And so, yeah, it was a great venue for it. It was nice at Magic Live to be able to, they give you plenty of elbow room. I had a full 20 minutes to talk. And yeah, so I enjoyed it. And meeting a lot of great people here.
Well, Stan, it seems like over the years, has been calling on his friends like you, who were part of the Long Beach Mystics from way back when. And you've been working cruise ships.
I do a lot of them, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm doing one next week up in Alaska. I've been up in Alaska a lot this summer.
Mm-hmm. Hard to be away from your family for a while, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a week at a time.
Oh, it's not
and,
bad, then.
Yeah, and as it happens, they happen to have been in Germany most of this summer anyway, so it made sense to go out. But, man, plus they come with me quite a bit.
Oh, they do?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The hard part, it was actually great, because it gave me a lot of time to prepare for the talk. With my family gone and me on a ship so much of the time, I had nothing to do but fret and prepare for Magic Live.
Yeah. Right. Now, when you are performing normally, do you tend to do more comedy in talking with people as opposed to juggling, since that you're not had that neurological problem? Or?
Yeah. I mean, my show, I typically, if I'm doing an hour show, I'll do 20 minutes of stand-up comedy.
Okay.
And then I'll segue to the variety. And so I'll do 40 minutes of juggling and stuff. So it's a combination, but if I'm giving a talk, I'll do the same thing, stand up, variety, and then I'll give a talk afterwards. It's nice that they see the show before I give the talk.
Yes.
As we referenced earlier, so they know exactly, you know, what I'm referring to.
Right. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
And so, how long ago had Stan contacted you about coming and doing this?
Oh, boy, I don't know what it was. Maybe...
I mean, he plans this, like, for 2 years in advance.
I know it. I honestly can't remember, because I'm terrible at guessing. It's been at least 6 months, probably closer to a year.
So you had a long time to kind of put this whole thing together.
Well, not that it did me much good. I
no,
ended up cramming anyway. That's the way I work.
Well, sometimes working under fire is the best.
No, I was thinking that. I was reassuring myself of that, because the day before the talk, I really didn't see any other... Didn't go to the general sessions, didn't go to the focus sessions. I was just kind of in my room practicing and thinking, you know, if I had been rehearsing this every day for the last 3 months, I could go to the general sessions and relax. But, you know, maybe that's just the way I work. You know, it's good to sometimes people just cram. And
well, also because that if you want to be topical and kind of on top of what's going to be happening now, as your humor is, that you almost have to be reading this morning's newspaper to get that kind of sense of urgency, you know.
That's right.
And so then you kind of put it together, and you kind of walk in a fine line. So, you know, sometimes things work and sometimes things don't, and you really don't know until you try before a live audience.
Sure, that's what I was reminding myself, actually, is even though it's a big deal, it's a huge theater and all these people are there, it's really no different than what I'm doing normally. As long as the microphone works, you know, and you don't have a cold or something, you know, just go out there and do what you do.
Right.
And, you know, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was happy with the way it went, and I'm having a great time now that I'm done.
And what, aside from your part, what else have you enjoyed?
I have been enjoyed. I went, just came out of Tony Clark's
Balls Over the Head,
the Slidini thing. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I thought that started in Circle 2:15.
Well, no, I did went to the early one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I enjoyed that thoroughly. I enjoyed Lehman and
David Lehman.
Yeah, they were great. Always enjoy them.
Yep.
And I'm going to the general session today, the Wednesday general session, so I'm looking forward to that and to the show tonight.
Yeah, because we're switch. I see you're blue and I'm
red.
I'm
blue,
so that's why,
yeah.
That's why, yeah. I was wondering about that, Balls Over the Head. How can you talk for an hour about, I mean, I understand all the psychological nuances of that, certainly, but obviously Tony makes this quite entertaining and educational.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I didn't watch it as a magician so much. It was just neat. Seemed to presume that everybody knew the basics of it, but it was interesting, like the thing about the different angle, and just hearing stories about Slidini. I mean, here's a guy who, boy, taught that people, a lot of people, that routine. I've met so many people who, you know, learned magic from Slidini.
Right.
So it was really interesting, and I enjoyed it.
There's so many people who claim that they were students of Slidini, and they are legitimate claims because he taught a lot of people. You could go and take a lesson or two. You didn't have to be like a year-long
understudy. Somebody told me he took out ads in Genie or something saying, I'm going to be in L.A.
Yep.
If you want to learn from me, here you go.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll start to wrap up and let you go because we're going to get ready for the night. I want to catch the session here shortly. I've asked you, I think it's before when we talked, about your magic word, but I'd forgotten. What is it that's important in your life? What drives you?
Yeah. Oh, I would say, I remember you stumped me last time on this. You know what, I'll be unconventional. I'll just say ambition. I'm ambitious. I want to realize my potential.
That's good.
And, it keeps me out of trouble.
I like what I believe that, you hear this in the session later when you go this afternoon to the general session, but I believe it's Mark Kornhauser was talking about that. Kind of getting around that same point as far as ambition goes, and that is that you shouldn't strive to be rich and famous. That's an outgrowth of being successful in pursuing your passion. So you can be ambitious to do the best you can do, and as a result of that, it's not being ambitious to be rich and
famous. Yeah, they say that about being happy. You don't aim to be happy. You aim to live a good life, and the happiness is an outgrowth.
Right.
I think to a certain extent you can pursue happiness. You can take a long way around the door. But, as far as money goes, if your goal is to make as much money as possible, I'm sure there's ways to do that. And if you know of any, let me know whether you do that.
Well, that was what Joel Bauer was talking about in his lecture.
I heard about that.
Man, he's
intense, I hear.
Very intense, that's for sure. All right, David, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Scott, happy to be with you.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was David Ebel. This is Scotty out. Viva Las Vegas. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and the dealers are about to close and pull everything down, and before long they'll be converting us over into the evening party palace, I guess, basically.
The gala extravaganza party.
That's it, the farewell party. And so I have with me Master Payne here. Hello, Master MP.
Yes.
That's redundant. Master MP.
Yeah.
Just MP.
Just MP or Payne. I just go by Payne, you know. This Master just seems to be too formal.
And mass.
Mass doesn't work.
Sounds something like planet should be revolving around you or something, you know. And so they do. Every place that I've been, I haven't had a chance to talk with you because it seems like there are a lot of people who have been revolving around you and talking, that you. And so this year you were not a presenter. In past years you have been.
Right.
If you guys have not seen Master Payne's presentation, basically what he has presented in the past is like a PowerPoint presentation, unlike anything that you have seen, in which that he can make at least 20 minutes of a coin and a bottle trick that you would buy. Well, I don't know how to say this. most entertaining 20 minutes you could possibly think of, and beyond that. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
The comedy and the thought you put into all this, it's just amazing. Now, are any of these available that you can see you online on YouTube or something?
The coin and bottle, which isn't a PowerPoint, it's an actual presentation.
It's
a presentation, but there's no PowerPoint involved. But it is a presentation. Is on YouTube. You just look up Master Payne. Actually, if you just Google Master Payne coin and bottle, it'll come up.
Okay.
And a lot of my PowerPoints are on Vimeo. So if you do Master Payne, Magic and Meaning, or Master Payne Magic, those will come up.
Yeah.
Or you can go join McBride's Mystery School, and they're behind the paywall now.
Oh.
They used to be available for free, but he moved them behind paywall, so I'm now an income stream. So.
I know that you have been involved with his masterclass for some time.
I just go to Magic and Meaning. I'm now the official closer for the event, because they just decided no one can follow me, and they bring me in every year to do the final end talk. He has a sort of TED Talks of magic, so the participants can opt to do a presentation of some sort, and so mine are I've been doing them every year I've been there.
That's right. As I recall in talking with him, I haven't attended one of these yet, but apparently there are a lot of people who are wanting to do that, but he only selects a very few to come and actually do it.
Eight or ten, because we don't have so much time.
Sure.
It's just like 3 days, and if everybody talked, we'd be there for weeks.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Even if they were short talks.
Yeah. I mean, they're all about like 20 minutes long, and he does like 3 or 4 a day and for 2 days. And
when you wrap up, do you kind of take a position that I'm going to be topical and talk about everything that has been discussed through here, or do you come pre-prepared?
Everybody has to come pre-prepared, because you have to give if you're doing a PowerPoint, you have to give them the PowerPoint so they can convert it into a different type of file for their system, so that everything has to be kind of set in stone. And since my presentations that are so complex, they take between 40 and 100 hours just to do the slideshow.
Wow.
Because it is all the finding all the images, converting the images, writing, rewriting. So they're really labor intensive, but
right.
they're worth it. I mean, those presentations that got me booked here.
Yeah.
So then that opened up the whole world. Once I did Magic Live, everybody saw me and was, I want him at my convention or my event. And so it's been really good to do that. And Jeff really kind of pushed me forward and said, more people need to know about you. So
right.
that's what Mystery School is all about, is improving the art and mm-hmm. helping people rise up to the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. And you have been, I guess, really got your bread and butter at Ren Festival.
I cut my teeth in medieval.
Hey, Cosmo. Hey, say hello, Cosmo.
Hey,
it's Cosmo.
Hey, everybody,
also,
how you doing?
Because we're talking about checking out. You're closing the dealer's room, so.
Well, I am checking out, and we haven't leaving the dealer's room. It's been a long, long week, let me tell you. But great convention, as usual. Stan does that amazing job. I don't know that I've met you
You're
before.
You're Master Payne?
Well, we've talked.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, no.
Street guys.
Yeah, street guys.
Yeah, two of the best. Well, one of the best in me, right here, right now.
too modest. Yeah. I only perform in controlled street situations like Ren Fairs, but you do it out in the real world where anything can happen.
And it does.
And it does, frequently.
Yeah, I got some stories, let me tell you.
So, got one right now? You got one you can tell?
No.
Okay. Well, but you've been not only selling stuff here also, but you've been recording some stuff for Real Magic Magazine.
Yeah, well, when we come to a convention, our focus is on content, not selling subscriptions, Because if you're not subscribed now, I mean...
You should be.
There's some. Well, I don't insult anybody out there. But, yeah, it's all about content. So, in Magic Live, there's so many great magicians here. It's easy fishing for me to get content for them.
They're almost lined up, aren't they?
They are. They are. Everybody wants to be on Real Magic On Demand. Everybody should want to watch it, too.
Yeah. So the kind of stuff, you've got like several months in advance right now of content that's...
Oh, we have great stuff. I just spent a date with Philippe Petit. And if you guys don't know who he is, he's the guy in 1974 that snuck up to the World Trade Center and walked across the tightrope from one tower
and
to the other.
And they made a movie
They're making
a movie.
Yeah,
On the Wire was a documentary, but now Robert Zemeckis is
doing a live action
Hollywood
deal.
On the Blockbuster deal, and it comes out in October. So I got to spend a day with him. That was fantastic. We just we have a John Carney in a can, and we've got a lot of great stuff coming up, you know. Yeah. So we just did Steve Spill, and yeah, and I'm missing people.
Oh, but, yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, I'm missing people that are going to be on the cover, but. We're working hard to make it better every day, Scott. I mean, that's what we do.
And when you're working, you don't have much time to work on the street then, really, right now.
I'm working Saturday.
Are you really?
I'm working Saturday, yeah. And I just want to prove that I can still do it. The old guy can keep up with these young whippersnappers.
Is that what you
like
do?
Master Payne.
Is that what you do from time to time? You just go out just to kind of keep your chops?
Yeah, I do. I want to be tight. You know, yeah. So when I get asked to do something, I'm strong. And I'm pretty good still. I mean, I'm not what I was 10 years ago, but I'm still pretty good.
Well, that's good advice, I think, you know, for anybody. Rather than resting on your haunches, you got to continue to perform. Just to get back out there and do something all the time, you know.
Well, you got to work at it. I mean, you know, and the streets are a wonderful place. Master Payne will tell you that where can you go out and do show after show after show after show, day after day? You know, if you fail, they just walk down the street. It's not a big deal. You just start again. I mean, you want to be a great magician. You practice. You spend your time in front of the video camera, the mirror. You want to be a great performer. You spend your time performing. You got to find places to perform to be a great performer.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Cellini's just say it, and he was right. 1 year on the streets like 10 years anywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Makes you strong, you know. And so when you go and when you go inside, it's just easy.
Yeah,
it's just easy.
Well, because the audience is already there and captivated. Whereas, and also your audience will tell you whether they like the trick or not by the fact they're going to walk on if they don't like it. You
that's
know,
it. You know, yeah, they just walk away.
Yeah,
you know? And it makes you confident. You know, people say, "Hey, how do you handle hecklers?"
Yeah,
I don't remember ever having one.
Really?
I mean, in the 25 years of working the streets, it's been so rare because you've done so many shows, you're confident.
Well,
even
Payne,
in the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say, you at the Renfest, I mean, the people are drinking mead there, you know.
Well, yeah, you get hecklers at the Renfest because the Renfest is more participatory, and they know that they can break that fourth wall. And so you'll get people that want to get in on the game. And sometimes you let them play, and sometimes you just have to shut them down, just depending on what they're doing. But I very rarely get the go, "Oh, you suck, that's horrible." It's like I used to do a trick called the Ram's Bladder. Well, I still do it called the Ram's Bladder trick. It's my version of surgery neck. And I would have people actually bring, you know, Ram's Bladders to try to throw me and stuff. But, you know, you have to roll with the punches, and that keeps you sharp and on your feet. You know, if you recoil, they see weakness, and they will attack.
They'll sense the blood.
Blood in the water, and you don't want that. So
well, that's one thing I think as a street performer, Cosmo, that you have to be strong all the time, so that way that you command attention.
Yeah, you know,
do you create a character that's larger than life?
No, I'm me. Just to expand. I'm.
Well, those, we are. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty rough guy out there, and my humor inside is pretty rough too. And I go to I say the same things at the Magic Castle that I say on the street, mm-hmm. if I can get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if there's reason to say those things.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I forgot where we were going here because I'm tired, but did I answer that?
But a lot of it is a different energy level on the street that you have to project a larger than life energy level.
Yeah.
And inside you can bring it in and you don't have to do that, but outside you just sort of have to command your space.
Right.
You have to be in possession of it. This is mine.
Well, that was what I was saying, is that on the street that you have to command such a... have a character that people will not want to try to.
It's all about confidence. It really is.
That's it. That's the word.
This is like maybe 2003, 2004. I was real. I've been doing, you know, 10 shows a day. I did 3,000 shows in 2001, 2002. I mean, I was did 10,000 shows in like 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was burnt. I mean, at the end of it, I had a family. I was raising my kids. You know, I had a house, you know, kids, college, all that stuff I had to deal with.
Yeah.
And, man, I was just burnt out. I was burnt out. And I came home in October off the road, and I said, "I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to go do something else. I'm done doing this. I hated people. I hated doing the show. I hated my show. I hated my voice. I hated everything." And so I took my table, and I put it in the closet, and I told my wife I was done. A couple years prior to that, I was in a hotel room with Cellini.
Yeah.
And he's broken down old man at this point. And he's on his bed, and I'm on my bed, and I wasn't on his bed. And
you're not that close.
Yeah, almost. And I said to him, I said, "Jim, what were you like when you were young?" And he got this twinkle in his eyes, and he stood up, and he flexed his muscles, and he says, "I was strong. I was powerful. If somebody walked down the street, they were going to stop and watch me because that's what I wanted." I was complete control. I'm looking at him. I got no idea what he's talking about because I was never in control. Hmm. Well, 6 months later, it got to be spring, Master Payne, and I started to miss it a little bit, you know. And I'm looking at my closet, and I woke up on Saturday morning. It was a beautiful Saturday morning. I got a pitch about 30 miles from my house, and I looked at my wife and says, "I'm going to go out, and I'm going to do this, try this again, and see if I can love this again." And I did, and I went out. That 6 months of not doing it, you know, just reflecting on my life out there, I walked out there, and all of a sudden, I was all those lessons, little lessons that I learned from doing all of these shows, all came together. And it was, and I was like, I was powerful and I was strong, and everybody who was walking down the street, they were going to stop and watch me.
Yeah,
that's the feeling I had. It was the first time I really understood what the heck was Cellini talking about. That's what he was talking about, and I know that you feel the same thing because you're a master of what you do. Yeah, and that's that that. And the time I got to spend with that man was one of the greatest gifts. I mean, other than my wife and my kids, and I've said this, and you probably heard me say this, other than my wife and my kids, the greatest gift I've ever been given, and I bet you would say the same thing, is a little magic show that's taken me around the world. And Cellini was such a huge part of it. You know, I'm just, yeah. I just was so humbled and so honored to get to spend the time with him, and every time I get a chance to talk about him, I like to, because... Yeah. I loved him. I miss him.
He was quite a legend.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Don't cry. No, that brings us to a good point over here. That was very important to you, and I've asked you guys both independently, I think, before about what your magic word is. So what is important to your life then now?
What's important in my life?
Yeah. What's your magic word? What's important?
Magic?
No, not necessarily.
What's most important is my family, my dog. Yeah. I mean, magic's there.
Keep perspective. That's why
I know. My family's the most important. I love doing my show, and I love doing real magic. I mean, I do. I love doing my show more than I love doing real magic. But I got old, and I had to do something different, maybe.
Yeah.
But magic is just a great gift, and I love one thing. Garrett Thomas, who I think is the best close-up magician in the world, he says all of the time. He says, magic is a gift that you give to people, and if you're capable of doing magic at the level that some of us do, that you should be giving that gift all the time. It doesn't just have to be paid for. You give that gift when you're standing in the line at the checkout, or you're at the bar or the restaurant. Wherever you can do this, you should do that, because you're creating some special moment in somebody's life, you know, that they're going to remember forever, because they do remember forever. We are blessed to be able to do this. And so, I love magic. I love it so much, and I love what the joy that it brings everybody who gets to watch what we do. It's just awesome.
That's a great answer. Master Payne?
Oh, well, right now for me, my magic word is health. Health, because I'm getting to that age where, it's the most important. And, you know, as Eugene Berger said to me at the last magic meeting, you need to lose weight. We want you around for a long time. So, he said that. And so
he lost weight, though.
Oh, he did lose tremendous health, yeah. But it's been beneficial because I'm back at the health clinic, and I'm on diet pills, which is the only reason I'm standing at Magic Live, because I'm on uppers. Otherwise, I'd be asleep in the room.
I got some, too. Do you share?
No, I only brought enough for me.
Well, listen, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, no, this is great.
For being on the Magic Board. That was Master Payne and Cosmo. For the Magic Board, this is Scotty out.
Las Vegas turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and I have with me one of the presenters from today, Mr. Axel Hecklau. Hello, Axel.
Hello.
Glad to have you here, and glad to have you at Magic Live. You have been at Magic Live before. This isn't your first one.
It's my second one, but the first one on the
presenting.
Yeah.
Now, when you were presenting this, how long did it take you to start putting this all together? You were talking about the close-up club and how that you can start to put together your own venue, I guess, in your own community.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to kind of put your presentation together?
Oh, it takes me about 2 months. I think. So I'm not used to speak without doing magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a new adventure for me. So, but it fits to the theme of Stan Allen, adventure. It was an adventure.
Right. Step outside your comfort zone. That was kind of what it's all about. He was talking about. Now, your topic, by the way, of course, today was just about finding a venue and developing something in your own hometown, because a lot of times people say, well, I don't have any place where I can actually perform. Because a lot of guys, it seems like, again, are looking for a place to perform, but they can't find any place, and so this way you kind of make your own audience. And so was that kind of the genesis of how you guys came up with your idea originally, when you had the five guys who...
We started with five guys, and we wanted to, simply to... We started at the clubhouse of the Magic Circle Berlin, just to make a test to look how all this show works. Mm-hmm. And then we searched for a location, and we searched at famous places. That's important. And we got lucky.
Right.
We found a restaurant with a separate room that we could use, because it was unused that time on weekdays. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to perform on weekdays, because on Tuesday it's the weakest day for bookings. So nobody...
was using that.
Is using that. And we could use it for free. And they tested it, and they liked us, so we could use it more and more. Today we have to pay rent, but today it's established, and we earn money with that, so we can pay rent.
Right.
So no problem.
But the reason that you developed it in the first place, that was my question, I guess, is that you started it because you didn't have any place to perform on a regular basis?
Yes. And the basic thing is we like close-up magic, and we wanted to perform in the place where people come to see magic, and not the opposite direction. Normally you have to convince people that this what you're doing is great, because you go in the restaurant from table to table. They don't know that you will be there on an event or something. Mm-hmm. So the first minute is to convince them that this is fun. If they come to see you, they have a different expectation, and you can do things on the artificial way of thinking totally different. You can do storytelling magic. You can do routines with little small effects, but a great story around.
Mm-hmm.
You could never do this in a table hopping situation.
Correct.
So magic is all about touching the heart. And if you have a loud Brazilian big band in the background, it's hardly to touch the heart on a slower or a silenced way, a more sensitive way. And this is what I like in magic. Astonishment is not loud. If somebody is astonished, he's speechless, and you don't hear this reaction.
Right.
If they scream, maybe because of surprise, or they are shocked for a sudden thing. But the pure astonishment is not be heard.
Well, certainly, if you're going to be walking around doing table to table, or if you're working at a cocktail party or something, that's almost like guerrilla magic, we'd call it. You know, kind of get in and out real quickly, and they don't have a chance to experience the true wonder. I think that is something that they experience mystery, they experience surprise and fun and laughter, but not the emotional roller coaster that you can be taken on if they had a formal situation.
You have more possibility in the formal situation. Of course, you can create wonder also in a table hopping situation, but you are limited, and you have to look for so much things that are disturbing that emotion. So it's much easier to create astonishment in a formal situation.
I remember talking to Le Grand David, actually to Cesario Pelez, many years ago, and their show that they were doing in Beverly, Massachusetts on Le Grand David show was much grand illusion and everything. And the one thing that, the one word that he got across to me was enchantment, that he would create. An enchantment is a little bit different from an astonishment, I believe, because you're creating this style that you are enchanting people, but at least to me, I see a difference between the two. But you can also enchant by being engaging, and so he just has an engaging personality. He's an enchanting person. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the words come across, you know.
Yeah, I'm not a native speaker, so the nuances are a little far away from me. But
no. I understand. And so anyhow, that for those who are interested in trying to find their own thing, you were kind of inspired also by Steve Cohen and his Chamber Magic, I guess. You saw the success they had.
Not because of success. This is not about money. So it's because of just have people to they come to see you. That's the main goal, or the main motor to do this, motivation. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that was something that this morning Mark Kornhauser was talking about, saying that you shouldn't have as a goal the wanting to be rich and famous, that it should be that you want to entertain people, you want to be successful, you have a certain thing that you have a passion for doing, and out of that passion will grow that success and fame. And riches and whatever, and you are certainly you were saying perfecting your act, because obviously it's the more often you do it, the better you're going to get at it.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Any advice that you would give for people who want to try to open their own club in their own local area?
Just do it.
Just do it.
That's it. The first step is the most important one. So
jump off the cliff.
Jump off and do it in a team. It's more easy in a team.
Mm-hmm.
You can share tasks. You have more variety. Need less repertoire if you have a team. So you can show in the show in the first place. You're absolutely a material, and you develop over the time more material in that show. So your material grows, and this is great. So. I think in a team it's good, but everybody should find his own way he is comfortable with. So.
Right.
Well, by having you always need a team. You don't have to be a team on stage, but you have to have a team behind you for all the administration and the other things to do when you do a regular show, a regular basis show.
Even though a person can or might be able to have the ability to do all these kinds of things, they may not be a specialist in each of those areas. So it's best to have someone who's going to be doing each of those kinds of things to make you look better if you're going to be the one who's going to be on stage. So you need to have a team. I think that's right.
Of course.
And also they have an investment of their money as well, and time and equity, that they're a sweat equity, I guess we'd say.
The problem is, if you have a team that is not on stage, we were five starting, and our benefit was to perform, to get known, and this was our payout.
Mm-hmm.
If you have people who helps you backstage, you have to pay them.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's true. I guess. As we start to wrap up, because again, the closing the dealers and everything, and you're moving out, and that my question is about your magic word. That what is important to you? Not necessarily alakazam or that kind of a magic word, but what is your magic word? What is your?
I have two magic words for if you start a regular show.
Yeah.
And this is continuity and perseverance, because you have to build up a core audience, and this takes time. So. You need to continue shows.
The continuity.
Mm-hmm. And if you have not the perseverance to do this over a certain time period, it needs time to put up a core audience.
Right.
So these are two magic words for a project like that, yeah.
That sounds great. Well, thank you very much. That was Axel Hecklau for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty
Young. I'm going to keep on the run. I'm going to have me some fun. It cost me my very last dime. If I wind up broke, well, I'll always remember that I had a swing in time.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I've got with me Kayla Drescher. Hello, Kayla.
Hi, we're in an elevator.
We are. This was the elevator chat. We've still got another floor to go, though. So,
oh, great.
You've been working behind the scenes diligently with a lot of other guys and everything, then, too. How's it been?
It's great. We have a really great team, and we're just having a great time and trying to produce great results. So, go Magic Live.
How many people have been involved with that behind there?
I lost count.
I mean, like 20? 40, 100,
600? I'd say roughly 20 of all ages, from people learning up until people that are just doing it because they had a week off. So it's pretty cool.
Was the whole idea really to try to get more of the youth involved, to give them kind of a behind-the-scenes experience?
I can't really I can't really speak for Stan in that aspect, but I know that it's a great opportunity for young folks to be able to come in and do it. I know that there used to be the internship, and unfortunately they didn't have a formal internship this year, but there is still some great opportunity for young magicians to come in and get to see behind the scenes and also attend, the greatest magic convention. So, not a bad deal.
And what has been a highlight for you?
Two things. One is definitely Wayne Houchin was a huge highlight. He's kind of been sticking in my brain for a good portion of my time. And then two is just seeing everybody. It's so great to see, my friends from around the community and around the world. And, can't go wrong with just some hanging out with magicians.
What's
a great day.
That? Absolutely. Let me ask you, what is your magic word? What's important in your life? What's your philosophy of life?
That's a great question. I think, I don't know if it's a word, but it's definitely just spreading the great day. I know that it's probably not great grammar, but I just love making people happy, and the more that we can do that, and the better. That, and that's what magic's all about.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I was Caleb Drescher for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
How I wish that there were more than 24 hours in the day. Even if there were 40 more, I wouldn't sleep a minute.
Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. Well, there goes a bride walking through there, so in white shorts and a veil. That's interesting. You don't know what you're going to see in Vegas. I guess we're not going to leave that here in Vegas. So the evening show is over, and we only have the farewell party yet to go. And I thought you'd get some comments from a couple of the registrants. Richard Meyer, how are you doing, Richard?
How are you doing, Scott?
Fantastic. And Steve Bedwell.
Hey, Scott.
Dr. Steve Bedwell. Sorry. So my question to you guys, the convention's all over except for just the big blowout party here. So far, what have you seen that you've really enjoyed?
Well, one of the things that I've really enjoyed is the organization of the convention. And many conventions that I've gone to, the audio didn't work, the video didn't work, the timing was off. Everything has gone like smoothness here. And Stan should be congratulated on that.
There's a lot to be said about that, because you think that as entertainers, number one, that we should know about either doing it ourselves or paying someone, because we're using sound and light all the time. And so we should be better at it. But magic conventions seem to be notoriously bad and well known for being bad at that. And I don't understand. That's a good point. Well, we are in Las Vegas, of course, where that is their bread and butter. I mean, they should have it, all the proper facilities to make it perfect, you know.
But historically have not.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Stephen?
Steve, what do you think? What's been your highlight?
What's been interesting to me is the fact that if you speak to different people, they all have different highlights.
Yeah.
And that shows you how amazing a convention has been. It really has been. Even for Magic Live, I think this is the best one I've been to. I've been to virtually all of them.
Yeah.
And there's
weren't
been
you a presenter
so many
one year too?
Not at Magic Live. Okay. No, I've never presented at Magic Live.
Okay.
And it's been just an amazing experience. So many highlights.
Yeah. One of which was?
Yeah, I got to sit with Steve Reynolds yesterday, and he was working with me on my Zaro shuffle, which blows chunks, and hopefully it blows chunks a little less now.
Well, that was something that was kind of interesting. I went into that session. I couldn't get close enough, really, to get a hands-on thing. They had, like, what, six different tables kind of around?
Seven, yeah.
Okay.
So that's the setup,
and then everybody can go and choose whatever. It's going to be coins or cups and balls or the Zaro shuffle or whatever kind of a thing.
Exactly, and stay there for as long or as short a period of time as you want.
Yeah.
Like, I started off watching just Jason England, who's I'm a huge fan of his work.
Yeah.
And he started with some tips on bottom dealing that were absolutely excellent and things I hadn't heard before.
Yeah.
And then he transitioned into something else that I had seen him do before and heard him talk about before. So I then moved on to somebody else. It was very free-flowing, and people were moving backwards and forwards, and it was really great.
Right.
But there's been so many highlights. You know, Richard Wiseman's presentation on day one in the first general session, talking about some of his psychological research, was also excellent.
Right.
Obviously, I'm a huge fan of the Brits. Noel Britton
would knock it out of the park.
Exactly. On the first evening.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. So, all wonderful stuff.
He's got such an interesting delivery and a style that is kind of low-key.
Yeah.
It kills you.
And he's had a huge influence on me. He was very helpful back in the day before I left the UK, and he gave me a load of advice on delivering comedy. So, I'm a huge fan of his.
You know, I had done a podcast with Noel, just on him, and because I first met him, I was working at the Bristol convention some years ago, went to bathroom, spent a lot of time, so I contacted him on Skype to do an interview with him, and as we started chatting, then he said he was in such and such, Jakarta or Singapore, somewhere in Asia, and I said, oh, you're working on a cruise ship or something? He said, no, I'm actually here with a orangutan rescue, working with the World Wildlife Federation.
And he's
said,
really
what?
Not joking.
No,
either.
He's not, and we got off like for about a half hour talking about how important it is, but he was saying that we talk about comedy clubs in the UK and in the US and then what it was like and what it is now and kind of how it developed. But basically, he said, because of the pain that I'm seeing with how these animals are treated, that I'm seeing less comedy in the world. world than what I did before. So I don't feel that I could be as funny as I was before because I see how serious some of these issues are in the real world, and I'm trying to make fun of certain things. However, if he's not as funny now as what he was, he must have just been off the charts hilarious because he was great, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I thought
and by the way, you can go back and just do a search for Noel Britton in the archives of the podcast and listen to that. You guys will be blown away. It's a fantastic interview we had with him.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
He's very articulate about the art of comedy. And I remember staying at his flat years ago, and just all the walls were covered with videotapes back in the day of different comedy performers.
Yeah.
So he has a huge collection of comedy material, and that he's studied and really gotten to grips with it.
Right.
And so talking to him about comedy is just a masterclass.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting seeing that he had some great customized material specifically for this event.
Yeah.
And so did Justin Willman this evening.
Right, that was a one-off thing that you won't be seeing or hearing again. Yeah, it was just really for the magicians. Yeah.
Exactly, and the whole convention's been wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Richard, I'm not going to let you off just by saying that the technical side was great. Give me one or two of the people that was good with you.
Well, Justin Willman was amazing tonight. I thought that was incredible, and it's a great... it's almost like a lecture on how to connect with the audience and stay connected.
Yes.
Which was really fantastic. And this general session yesterday was phenomenal. Just phenomenal. Yeah. With help me out.
It was David Diebel, I think. Was he the one that, or was it Mark Kornheim? That was today.
No, David Diebel.
David Diebel yesterday was,
And he just was, and he was spot on with comedy in the moment.
Yeah.
It absolutely connected. It was fantastic. And Derek Dilgut, was it? Who was the fellow who does the clerk magic?
The what magic?
You know,
Michael Carbonaro.
Oh, the Carbonaro effect. Yes.
Yeah, he was really incredible. I think yesterday was amazing because it was everybody that was in this general session yesterday. It was all about connecting with the audience. It wasn't about here's a trick.
Yeah, well, even Wayne Houchin was teaching a couple tricks, but he really connected with the audience. In fact, I was talking with Kayla Drescher just earlier this evening, and I asked her about a highlight. She said Wayne Houchin.
Wow.
Yeah, the way that he connected with her, I guess, it just said, wow, this guy was just great.
Which goes back to Steve's comment about everybody has a different highlight for the convention, which tells you that there was a lot going on.
There's a lot of stuff going on there. That's fantastic. Well, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Richard Meyer and Steve Bidwell. This is Scotty out. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas with your neon flashing. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and we have sitting over here at the bar after things are pretty much kind of over, except for the farewell party. I've got Tony Clark. Hello, Tony.
Hi there, Scott. Where are you?
I'm fantastic. And so I wanted to talk with you about being a presenter. I'd like to talk with some of the guys, and it looked like that your room was full for every session.
Yeah, it was fun. I think we had about 2 to 250 in a room.
Yeah, in each one? Wow.
100 an hour apiece.
And your session was about Tony Claudini's balls over the head.
Yes.
Kind of a thing.
Yes.
And at first blush, whenever that I saw that, I thought, how can you talk about that for 1 hour? But it was more than that.
Well, I described that routine involves timing, mixed direction, offbeat, audience management. And so it's more than meets the eye.
Exactly.
A lot of people misconstrue that routine. And like, oh, it looks easy. Just throw the ball over their head. But there's many details that are hidden in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to break that down piece by piece, step by step, and give examples, bring somebody up on stage, and tell some funny stories. So, yeah, it went by pretty quick, really.
That's what I was going to say. Just if you will share a story or two about Vernon that was something from the lecture so some of the people can get an idea.
Well, with Slidini, I talked about how he taught step by step, how he wouldn't teach you the next step until you learn the first step. You know, so like, for instance, paper balls over the head, that took me about 4 weeks to learn that.
Yeah.
It's quite a long time.
Yeah.
And like coins to the table, that was almost 2 months. There's so many bits and routines and so many segments to it, you know, Hank Ping Chen, this and through the, you know, so there's a lot of pieces. And he wouldn't teach you unless you came back and it was clear and clean.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd move on. So that was the fun part.
Yeah, I think when we were at the castle and talking, you were remarking about how that you had taken the lessons, you know, from Tony.
Oh, it was great.
But then a lot of people have taken lessons, and he had even put an ad in the newspaper that he was going to, or I mean, Genie, sorry, that he was giving lessons.
Sure.
And so a lot of people say, well, I studied under Houdini, under Slidini.
Yes.
And they're all correct because he had taught so many people.
Sure, he had a lot of students. I was surprised. He even taught doctors and lawyers because they like to do it for family and friends, you know, and their clients. Yeah, he had a lot of students. You know, he did.
Yeah, yeah. I think, was it you who were telling me before when you'd gone to his house and that he fixed dinner for you, like spaghetti or something?
Yeah, he liked to cook, and he was very cordial, never rushed me out. I mean, the lessons were an hour, but it was always at least 2 hours.
Yeah.
Never was an hour.
How much did you pay for the hour?
Oh, my God, it was...
You remember?
Nothing. $30.
I was going to say $35 for some reason.
Nothing.
Rings a bell with me, yeah.
Nothing. I mean, I would have paid $100.
Yeah.
Even at that point, that was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And that I would have gladly paid that much.
Sure.
But I thought, oh, I got $30. That's incredible. So.
Yeah. It is, was wonderful, again, that you had taught, that was for 2 days. It was like yesterday you had two sessions and today, or sorry, yesterday?
No, the morning two and the afternoon two.
That was it, just on the one day.
Two, yeah. It was hard, back to back.
Yeah.
I was a little tired to do that, back to back, but... they were good crowds.
Yeah.
Good response. I closed with the paper balls and the rings and the box routine with the music. You know, even though it's a lecture, I like to finish with some kind of a performance piece.
Yes.
I just think it's great that I would want to see that.
Sure.
Instead of just talking about a trick. So I closed with that. It went well. You know,
right.
I was happy with it.
Do you feel like it got a little bit tighter each time that you did it? Because I was talking, like, with Mike, I'm sorry, Joel Bauer was saying, you know, that he had so much to talk about and each time he said it got tighter and tighter and he was able to get more in.
Yeah, I think it got better as I went along because people asked questions. So I was, I'll include that question that I got in the last session to this session.
Yes.
Because I've done the routine for 30 years, so I don't even remember, like, what could go wrong sometimes. People ask, what if this happens? Oh, that's great.
Right.
Or what if this guy says this? Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So I did add stuff to it.
I thought that was kind of interesting also because one of the shows they had was the evening documentary in which they talk about Stars of Magic, and they showed a video of Slidini.
Yes, great. Classic.
Doing that on the Cabot show.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so you do that in your show all the time then still, you say?
Well, it depends. Like if I do the castle, like in 2 weeks I'll do that routine.
Yeah.
I do a little video clip to educate the people who he was, and then talk a little bit about what he did for me, and then I do that routine. So it seems it works nice.
And I remember that I've seen some people do this. A lot of times they'll say, have any of you heard of Slidini or have you seen this before? And because particularly among magicians, because a lot of people know what this is going to be, so it's kind of difficult to fool somebody that has seen it.
Right. It's interesting. My method, actually, if you see, I can still fool the people because I have a very erratic system. It's every phase of the routine is different.
Yeah.
So you can't, even if you get the first phase, the next two, you'll never get them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. Okay, we just wanted to wrap up and just say, you know, thanks a lot for being one of the presenters and doing such a good job.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Always good to see you, Scott.
You as well. And just one other thing, since you were presenter today, but there were other things the last few days you've seen. What were some of the highlights that you can...
Highlights of what I did?
No, of what
coming up
of the Magic Live in general. Just
the highlights. Yeah. Oh, I think it's very unique. It's a great convention. I think they give you so much for what you. It's so full of stuff to do here.
Yeah.
I mean, all the shows are great. Yeah. All the presenters are great.
Anybody that kind of stands out though? It's like this guy was great, or I remember. The
I don't know. I it's hard to say. I enjoy it all. It's hard to pick, you know. I just love it. You know, that's why we're here.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I think, about seeing friends. And
oh, my God. It's great. It's like a reunion every time. You know how it is. You know. I see you at these things, right?
That's right. So. We're going to see each other often.
Yes. That's
okay,
great.
Thanks very much for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Tony Clark. Scotty out.
I'm going to keep on the run. I'm going to have me some fun. It cost me my very last dime. If I wind up broke, well, I'll always remember that I had a swing in time.
Scott Wells for the MagicBoardPodcast.com, and I've got a couple of friends here that I thought might be of interest to you guys as well to kind of hear a few of their voices and some of their backgrounds. Also, I have then with me Giovanni Lavera. Hey, Gio.
Hey there, Scott.
And Ian, I'm sorry, Ian, what's your last name again?
It's Pigeon.
Pigeon, like Pigeon. I should remember that easily enough. And you are the creator of My Pet Boris, which I think is awesome. My question to you, first of all, is, why Boris? And then for those of you who don't have this, this is an app. It's a spider app, but go ahead. Why Boris?
Well, I think I always thought of spiders as Boris. Number one was
well,
probably
Australian.
Yeah,
so.
Maybe Australian, but I think we had a lot of US TV, and there was always Boris and Natasha in the Wacky Races, I think, and then there was the Who song, you know, which was My Pet Boris was actually a, or Boris the Spider was the Who. They had a song. Yeah.
No, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. So I always thought of Boris as sort of like a sinister kind of character,
yeah.
and yeah, that's probably why
well,
it came
that,
out.
That is really one scary kind of a trick, certainly. It's one of my favorites, and I know that you have that. The effect is, for those of you who don't have it and who may not be aware of it, it is everyone, I think, pretty much has this or should have it, but the app essentially is that where a spider ends up on the back of someone's hand, where a spider is on your camera, on your phone, I should say, and it looks like and feels like, because it vibrates, crawls on your hand. You put the phone on the palm of their hand, it crawls across. When they turn their hand over, the spider's back there. Because Jim Pace had something called, what was that?
The Web.
The Web, yeah. Which was the genesis of the idea.
Yeah, that was the trick that everybody knew, and I think it's one of the classics of magic.
Yeah.
And it was a card trick with a frustration type count where blank cards turned into cards with spider webs, became cards that were blank again, and all of a sudden the spider appeared as the kicker. And I always looked at it, and there were a few issues that I always saw where it introduced the spider at the end of the trick. So if you ever found somebody that was an arachnophobe, you had no way of getting out of it, because right at the end of the trick, spider came out, and then you found out if you're arachnophobic. So
right.
I invented this arachnophobic test at the beginning of the app to just check to see how people react to the idea of a spider, and you can abort it and switch to another person.
Now,
right
what
there.
Is that? I mean, I have not used that because I
no,
use
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Well, there's instructions that
I guess I have.
Most magicians don't read instructions.
I read the instructions, but I don't remember this. Was this
a
like the 2.0 or something? Or something?
No, it was pretty much there from the start. But,
okay.
But have a look at that. If you got the app, read the instructions.
I will go back and take a look.
There's a lot of gems in there. You know, there's a lot of psychology built in, and the other reason to create an app was I always thought that, you know, if you're going to introduce the spider, why not introduce the spider and really introduce the spider in a visual way, and,
yeah.
And the introduction of the iPhone and the Android, where, you know, you're able to have animation combined with vibration, combined with, you know, special timing and being able to have a finger come in,
right.
Which probably was borrowed at one point from the magic wallet or something. There was a whole pile of coins where you could go in and pick out a coin and
pull
it out of the
phone. Yeah.
And all of that technology became available, and it sort of luckily it blended into an effect that everyone likes. Yeah.
Well, what I've done sometimes is whenever I'm doing this, we'll get to you in Geo. Just a second, don't leave.
No, I'm not going nowhere. I can't wait to hear what he's going to say about this.
Cheers.
That's right. Having drinks over here. It's martini time. That's right. It's a clink mean over there. Okay. Was that whenever I've done this, and I remember one time I was freaking out, some girl said, "You got to do this for my sister. She is deathly afraid of spiders." It's like, she was an arachnophobe apparently, but she was wanting to see her reaction. I did it, and you know, she slapped me.
Oh, which is always good in magic.
Yeah, it is. That's the effect you're going for, you know.
Yeah, or if they curse, you know, it's a really good trick.
Yeah, or they crap their pants or something.
And it's funny. Probably one of the other things that one of the reasons why we came up with it was, I think I was talking to my kids at the time, and I was trying to impress on them that if you could create a passive income or create a trick where or an app where you could sell it for a dollar, and you could do a million copies of the dollar. It's a great way to teach kids on how to make money and make an income. And so that was probably one of the ideas from it. And
did you actually develop the app yourself,
yeah,
or
yeah.
I mean, you did all the programming and whatnot, or is there somebody?
I started off with a friend and. Who'd written an app before, and he lost interest in it really, really quick. He didn't want to do anything any further. We created a little prototype. We ran it by Apple. Apple didn't really want to go with it. They didn't think it did anything.
I was about to say that Apple's pretty finicky as to what they accept. Yeah.
Very tough, yeah. And it was something I was never used to. I'm never used to anyone saying no. I've always run my own business. I used to work with the Olympic Sports Timing. I was kind of a small businessman that was really used to getting a task, getting it done, not taking no for an answer. And so when Apple said no to me, it was kind of a shock, you know. And I was like, well, how can some company tell me that I can't do what I want to do, you know? And so I just had to work the system and find a way around it, and eventually I did. Yeah.
So. What was it that they said no about? I mean, what did you have to change to?
Well, I think at first they've got a lot of criteria, but it's very, very hard to begin with to know what that criteria is. So you've sort of got to jump through hoops and find out what their reasoning is. And it sort of came down to that they didn't understand, because it's a very, very simple app. It does one thing. It's like a timed video that runs across the screen, but with some extra things like the taking a picture of the hand, so it used a camera, it used some vibration, so it used specific things that the technology made available that wasn't available before. But for them, they're looking at it as a pure technology background. They don't think of the magic side of it, they don't think of the psychology side of it. And so I really had to make a case of convincing them that it was a good product that people would buy, and that there was a reason it had to be an app. And I think once you got through those hoops, and the idea of adding an in-app purchase was the kicker. As soon as I mentioned that I wanted to add an in-app purchase to it, they were like, oh,
then it's approved. Okay. So how many months did that take to...
6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the worst 6 months of my life.
Very frustrating, but yeah. it proved to be well worth it afterwards.
Yeah, but in the end, it probably became a much better product than it was originally going to be. I thought it was a simple idea.
By adding some of the things that you did, like the butterfly thing, I have the butterfly, and I bought a bunch of butterflies, and I've tried that, and it's one of those things, whenever they turn their hand over that point, they go, oh... You know, it's not really a great reaction or an effect to me, like the spider that people just completely freak out on. It reminds me, you know, Paul Richards has a great trick that he sells with his levitating an iPhone. And so when I'm doing that, you borrow a person's phone, basically, and it will balance off your fingertips. You know what I'm talking about. It's called eye levy or something like that. Anyhow, it's one of those things I think is great. I bought it, and I started performing it, and I have yet to have one of those freak-out kind of reactions. And even on the videos, when you're watching that, it's kind of like you can see people going, huh, that's interesting. And it's an interesting kind of reaction that is not what you typically would want. And again, like I get that with the butterfly, as opposed, and then the cockroach is kind of in between. It's kind of freaky because some people don't, nobody likes cockroaches. So you can do the butterfly, cockroach, or the spider. But the spider they just scream and fling their hands.
And it varies on the person, you know. Like sometimes you can do the spider and you just get off. Okay. But the whole idea that I liked about the original web was to create a different emotion in your magic set, that it wasn't just a card trick where people look at it and go, wow, I don't know how that works and that's really cool, or you're really talented in the way you can control cards, or a coin trick where, like, I don't know where it went and it's amazing. But if you can create something like with the butterfly, you do it with a little girl or a lady at an event where at the end of it they've got a gift that they can take home.
Yeah.
And it's not a, oh, that's cool. It's like, oh, you know, it's a really lovely...
It is.
you know, in some ways for guys, talking to guys, it's kind of a finger in the mouth, let's vomit in a bucket type effect. But, you know, it's a soppy, it's a romantic, it's a nice effect. It's a lovely effect, you know, and that's a different emotion that you can pop into your act.
Sure.
The cockroach is different to the spider in that a cockroach is a yuck emotion, you know, and where a guy maybe is not afraid of spiders because he's tough and doesn't want to show that, a lot of guys will react much better to a cockroach because it's like a ugh, I want to get that off me, compared to the fear that a lady will have with a spider of this is a dangerous item. And it really depends on the culture. In Asia, the cockroach is an amazingly dirty thing that they don't want to have near them. So
it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, so it really covers the gamut of the different cultures. So, yeah.
Interesting. Switching subjects then, going over to Geo just a second. You were telling me that you've got just an interesting project that you've been working with in Florida that's going to be opening this fall.
Tell me a little about that. Yeah, you know, Attilio Sisypho has got one of the wonderful...
Attilio Sisypho.
Yeah. He's has a wonderful project in Orlando, and it's called the Great Magic Hall. Now, for those of you who are familiar with theater magic, is a brand... Of products that sells mainly in the tourist marketplace.
Okay.
And Attilio had an opportunity to have a theater.
Yeah.
And he engaged me to help him with this project. And a lot to be in store. In October 2015 in Orlando, Florida, the Great Magic Hall will open. So...
And it's not affiliated with Universal Studios or Disneyland.
No. There's so much opportunity there.
It's a tourist destination.
Oh, yeah. It's right there in the tourist marketplace.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful home for a lot of the magicians in Orlando to come. And
but there'll be live magicians performing
there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Or I should say magicians performing live.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. At this place. And so is it a bar open for adults, for children, for families?
It's a family-oriented destination.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You know, Orlando's a family marketplace.
Yeah.
And, it's in the Old Town area.
Okay.
Off of 192. So
it's called what again?
It's called the Great Magic Hall. So
okay.
Check it out.
And so it'll be opening again like in October?
October.
Okay. And it's going to be kind of in conjunction with the Genie Convention.
Yeah, well, the Genie Convention will be, I think the Genie Convention is going to be happening in November.
Okay, so it'll be open by then.
So for those of you coming to the Genie Convention,
be sure and stop by.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy it.
So what do you guys think, by the way, of this convention? How are you enjoying Magic Live?
Oh, Magic Live is always great. You know, Stan does a great job, always has nice surprises. And it's wonderful to come out and see all our friends. You know, that's the big thing. But there's so much learning, and it's nice to see young and old, right? It's nice to see some of the old faces, but it's also nice to see some new faces. And it's really been a wonderful convention.
Yeah. How about you, Ian?
Well, yeah. Again, I'm fairly new to the convention scene. I think I've been to my third Magic Live and probably three FISMs. But I think the quality of the staging and the shows that they do here, the dealer hall is always amazing. The group of people, it's fairly... it's probably not as... diverse in countries as FISM, but here you've got a great selection of magicians from all over America, Canada, quite a big Australian contingent who always comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we always have a great camaraderie and the amount of time you can spend at the bars sessioning at night.
It's great for
people getting into magic.
Yeah, staying up late. And most conventions, people will agree that it's about the friends and seeing people, and particularly this one, when you got people who are going to be coming in from all over the world, or those who don't wish they could. I mean, it's kind of like FISM, I guess. At FISM, I was surprised. I'm guessing there probably were far fewer than 50 Americans who were there, maybe 30 Americans. plus the performers, I guess. I mean, as far as those who are just registrants, I was just kind of figuring that there were not many among the 2,500 people from all over the rest of the world. But even so, it was great because I know a lot of guys from other countries, and so you get to visit with you and other people that we see, and Phil Cass and other folks that we kind of see only there. But here, it's very unique as well, being able to spend time with friends.
And everyone's staying in the same hotel.
And that's
an
thing.
Amazing thing.
They're not going out someplace else. Yeah. And not just in the same hotel, but the same area. Because all of the activities all happen kind of in the same place, as opposed to being spread out.
Great benefit.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with it, too. Now, you probably haven't bought much, Gio, I guess. Have you seen anything at the dealer's room that you can't live without?
Not a thing.
Really?
No, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful products,
yeah,
and things. But
yeah, Stan says there's like 48 dealers here.
Yeah, I mean, the dealers are amazing. They're everything from, you know, things that are high tech,
yeah,
to things that are low tech and no tech. And, it's always fascinating, you know. I there wasn't anything that I couldn't live without for myself.
I thought there wouldn't be for me, but then whenever that I saw something that Mike Lamar had come up with and Losander had developed for him, that is this levitating glass, basically, and they're looking for what to name this thing. I mean, they're just taking orders for it right now. It's an impromptu thing with a wine glass that you can borrow someone's glass at a table, you use their napkin, put it over there, and you levitate it, and you can pick up the napkin, and you can see underneath it, it's floating. You drop it, you know, on their hand, open their hand, and it puts right on their hand. It's really pretty, and so I thought, I got to get one of these things.
Wow, I didn't see that.
It is very, very cool.
See, now you're making me upset.
Tomorrow, before they close tomorrow.
Oh, my God, I got to go check it out.
I made a video of it, and I put it on the blog.
Kind
of see how
nice.
Works. But they're still trying to come up with a name for it, so I suggested Levy Glass or Corsair, or Crystal Air. I like Crystal Air because it sounds like an airline, because it's crystal, it's glass, and it's airborne, so Crystal Air. I like that name.
Oh, cheers. Looks like you bought it either way.
Well, I bought it. That's right. Yeah. So they're still, but yeah, I don't know when they're going to be delivering it, but I'm anxious to try this. It looks like something that you could carry around during a cocktail, you know, strolling even. So anyhow, getting off on dealer items. But as far as the rest of the convention goes, the shows have been really stellar. What do you, anybody in particular that stood out?
Well, you know, I mean, it's just funny. It's the Charlie Fry, my gosh. He always, every time I see that guy, it reminds me, go practice. go rehearse.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me that Pat Hazel, a buddy of mine who is a juggler and a comedian, used to live in Omaha as a juggler, and he said, I can appreciate jugglers more than magicians, because literally they talk about magicians in a joking way, where you can buy a trick today and put it in your show tonight. You could do that, and some do that. A juggler can't. You got to practice. You just can't pick up three clubs at the shop today and say, I'm going to juggle in a show tonight. You got to know what you're doing and have something entertaining. He said, so jugglers practice a lot more than magicians do.
Yeah, well, yeah, to watch Charlie Fry will inspire really anyone on the earth.
Yeah.
His energy and his execution, his enthusiasm.
Yeah.
He and his wife do a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Ian, anybody that kind of stands out?
Oh, well, I watched the Kevin Arra Effect. I think that's awesome. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed that section. I went to the Richard Wiseman experiment tonight, which was great.
Yeah,
I think he's
really
going to
cool.
do really well around the world, yeah. Let me see. I went to the dealer hall. I actually bought a few things too. So I got a garage full of stuff that I don't use, but I think I'm trying to focus in on things that I'd actually use these times. So I picked up a diver's lung tester.
Did you?
Yeah, well, I need to improve my lungs a little bit, and there's a few of my friends that that also need to.
Let me stop you there.
Yeah, I couldn't buy that.
You know,
I was upset with that.
I was, because I was the one that they did it on.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And
depends what clothes you're wearing.
Well, I was wearing a wool.
We don't want to tip anything here.
I was wearing a wool vest.
Yeah.
And so all that got into, and I'm going to have a dry clean.
Oh, no.
And I would not want to do that to one of my volunteers.
Never.
I do it to one of my friends at a dinner party, though.
I don't know.
I got particularly one friend I'm going to do it to, so okay. I hope he doesn't listen to this before I do.
Well, I'm not going to tip what it does, but it's just I was thinking this was done to me, so I know what that feeling is like. It wasn't that I was embarrassed. It was just I was very upset. I was very mad,
right.
And I thought I would not buy one of those.
I think it's one of those little, those beautiful little items, and I really
it is kind of steampunk.
I really can't say anything about it other than yes, it is a very nice brass ornament that you put on your counter, and occasionally I do bar magic, so it's certainly something that would sit beautifully
if you
in
a
bar.
Heckler, maybe.
Not so much for the heckler, but there's just occasionally it's a curiosity item, and it's kind of like, you know, the old saying, curiosity killed the cat, and that's the ultimate piece.
How much
of that,
would they had different things? What did they run price wise?
I think they ran from around the $250 to the $400-$500.
Oh, really? Mark. I could see
they're
that.
Quite expensive items.
They're very well made, though, too.
But they're beautiful. They're
that's the thing. You look at this thing; it's absolutely item, gorgeous. Yeah. But I couldn't figure it out. This is one of the things that makes magic bad for me.
Yeah.
You know, I saw it and I was like, oh my God, this prop looks absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
But then when I saw what it did,
yeah,
I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything why people hate magicians.
That's exactly right.
You know, it freaked me out. Like, the person gets stung pretty bad.
And that's what I think. There's a lot of difference in the world between the litigation of the litigious society in America, where you got to be really careful what you do to people. But there's always these types of effects that create different emotions, and if you can choose the right person to do it to, or in this case, and again without trying to tip anything,
a murderer or a thief to do it to them,
would be
perfect.
It's more an item that I think an item that sits on a shelf.
I'm with you.
Yeah, an item that sits on a shelf that people go, "What's that?" And they go, "Well, let me show you."
Yeah.
And well, that's the kind of person you do, you know. And it's not something you say, "Hey, try this," because that's a jerk thing to do. But it's kind of, again, the curiosity killed the cat, and that's the...
it's like the gum that you'd pick up and it snaps or something. Kind of, I was thinking about the electric chair of a thing.
I remember,
see? That's the thing in which that until it happens to you, it's funny watching these other people jump up and around. But I remember Sue Ellis, former Ellis.
Yeah. Had the FISM in Beijing.
That's right.
Yeah.
She was, I think she had done touring twice or something.
Yeah, you could see the pain in the face.
And it was, and she did not like being in that situation.
It was horrible,
And you think about, okay, well, do you really want to have your volunteer, one person out there who is, it's at their expense that this is happening?
Sure. And this causes no pain.
Oh, no. There's
it's really a harmless effect.
Only to the ego.
Yeah, and that's
and
it.
Only to your relationship with the audience. It's the only pain you're going to get is they're going to hate you after you do this.
You know, it is.
And not book another show.
And it's totally one of those pyramid effects where when it happens to you, for sure you're going to say, okay, I gotta show this to my friend, you know, and that's the kind of beauty if you can find one of those effects, and Boris is one of those pyramid effects where you get it done to you, you're gonna go.
Well, that's just like that lady I was telling you that said, "I do this to my sister." Yeah. She freaked her out, and she said, "Yeah, you got to do this for her." Everybody lets someone else experience
Boris
that.
Is one kind of stick.
Hey, Rafael Benatar over here.
Rafael,
then, hey, Rafael.
How are you?
See you.
We're doing
our podcast again. Remember this? We were at Castle. Good to see you, buddy.
You got a green mic, that's here, right?
Yes.
Hi.
Is Ian Pigeon? Rafael Benatar. So how are you enjoying the convention, by the way, since you're here?
Oh, it's a great party.
Yeah, it's a great. That's what it is, a party. Yeah, yeah. That's the way of putting it.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about friends and all that kind of a thing.
It's well, and there is substance, too.
Yeah. Really, some good stuff. Have you learned any good things or seen anything or bought anything?
Yes, all the time, but I don't measure it by things. It's like you learn and you grow.
Sure.
But it's not about how many things. Yeah.
So you're here until Thursday? Are you going to be heading back? Are you going to be going out to Castle or working? Or
after midnight.
Oh, you're going back home to Spain? Or?
I'm taking a little vacation in Miami visiting family.
You got to go visit Gio.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, I'm in Orlando.
Yeah, well.
Not too far, a little further north.
Yeah.
But I'm worth it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, good discussion. Thank you guys very much over here. Let me just ask you quickly, because I've asked Raphael this before, but you guys haven't been on the podcast. What is your magic word? What is it that's important in your life? I always like to close to kind of find out.
It's family for me.
That's it? That's what I want to hear. Family for Gio. Ian?
To quote a friend, belief.
Belief. Very good. All right. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was our newcomer over here, Raphael Benatar, the new guy. Gio and Ian, this is Scotty out.
Fever, Las Vegas, turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here about to talk with Roy Johnson about the convention, but also that Dan Sperry just walked by. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, hi, I'm right here, and I'm now, you can say that I'm on your podcast, and I'm not avoiding it because I'm actually on it now. So now, but I'm leaving now.
Now it's official. Thank you very much. So, Rory, that the preparation for this has obviously taken a couple of years.
Yes.
To put the whole thing together, and I know you and Stan start with like a whiteboard. Then
we
to
do
begin
a
with.
Giant, like four giant whiteboards.
Yeah.
Covers one whole wall of the office, and then the other whiteboard is another wall in the office.
Yeah.
And it's blank when we start.
And so then, a little at a time, you just kind of have ideas. You walk by and write something, or you wait until you have like a meeting and a brainstorm session.
Yeah. Well, we do both. You know, we already are planning half of the next one.
Yeah.
While we were doing this one, a lot of times things just didn't come to fruition. This time we couldn't get them going, so we put them on the board for 2016.
Yeah, and that's the thing, next year, so it's not going to be like 2 or 3 years, it's actually next year.
It is next year, and the reason for that is next year is the 25th anniversary of Magic Magazine,
right.
So we didn't want to let such an auspicious occasion pass us by without doing a lot.
Right.
And then hopefully it would take 10, 12 years before the next one.
Which is what the idea was, I thought, originally, was not to have the convention this year. I mean, he was going to have like the 360 and then have this for the 25th.
Right.
And they decided not to do the 360. And then
we're pretty fluid.
Yeah.
Like it says on the program, our schedules are, they're flights of fancy and sudden turbulence change them all the time.
Right. What were some of the biggest challenges in getting this going or getting it happening?
Well, the biggest challenge is sleep.
I can, as a podcaster, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, we start at like 7 in the morning and then usually don't get back to bed until 2 in the morning.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on back behind the scenes.
And it's nonstop running at one time. Trying to make it look smooth for all the other people.
Right.
I don't think people have any idea what goes on behind it, trying to get things together and crowd control and make sure everything's happening and a bazillion little details that are a blast. But you know what? We are very lucky to be able to do this. And as hard as it is, you wake up in the morning and it's like, we get to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said I live an I get to life. I get up in the morning, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to go to some job I don't like. I don't have to. I get up in the morning and I get to do, I get to write for a magazine. And I get to do magic, and I get to perform my cruise ships, and I get to, I get to.
Yeah, it's a blessed life.
It's a great life. Yeah.
And so typically that at magic conventions, after they're over, they immediately start taking registrations for the next one. And typically, you guys, again, don't know when the next one is going to be.
That's right.
But you're not taking, but now we do know it's going to be next year. You're not taking reservations here.
No.
You can register online soon?
Soon, but not yet.
Okay.
So we decided, there was a lot of debate in that, whether do we start it tonight just to see what happens for fun.
Yeah.
But we just decided, you know, we should wait just a little bit until we can regroup, breathe a little bit, get ourselves organized, and be really ready to go. Because that would be just another thing on top of Magic Web. It would have been another bazillion details.
Well, that's true. You know, when they first had said that it was going to be in 17, I thought, well, that's going to be opposite of the same year they're going to have the combined convention with the IBM and SAM. And already that this year, with the perfect storm of all the conventions that are happening with FISM and Magic Live and the Genie Bash, of all those happening and pulling all the registrants away, because those are so infrequently held that a lot of people who have discretionary income to attend conventions say, I'm going to go to that one instead of the one I normally go to each year.
Yeah, and so attendance, you know, there was some thought about that. Like, do we want to go opposite, you know, the same year that FISM's running?
Yeah.
But as it turns out, of course, we completely sold out. We couldn't have, we had to turn people away.
Yeah, you couldn't squeeze people in the shoehorn.
Yeah, yeah, so it was, Esau, it was pretty full.
It was, yeah. And I've been talking to so many people and asking what their highlights were, and many people were saying, I like this, or I like that, or this particular specific thing. And Steve Bedwell, I thought, put it quite well, saying, well, that is the hallmark of a good convention, because it seems that if there is not a general consensus that this thing or this guy was, you know, what people keep mentioning, but it's so different, many different things, that shows it's a great convention, because there were lots of highlights throughout the whole thing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So well, we try our very, very best. Stan is a perfectionist, for those that don't know him.
Yeah.
And he wants to do everything absolutely first class.
Yeah.
He spends a lot of money.
Yeah, we just had dinner here, for an example.
Yeah, we did. We just had dinner at the party. And
which is different. This is kind of, now I just happen to think of this, that we come on Sunday night and we have dessert. We have ice cream.
Yes.
And then on the final night, we have dinner.
Yeah, we
switching them around.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're a kid and you're growing up, and
you can eat ice cream.
You can still
want.
Be a kid if you want.
That's right. Well, Roy, thanks again for doing such a good job to you and Stan and the rest of the crew and everything. So
you're welcome. It was our pleasure. And now I'm going to go home and sleep for 3 days.
There you go. Thanks
all
very
right,
much.
Good night.
This is Roy John for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
I'm gonna keep on the run, I'm gonna have me some fun. It cost me my very last dime. If I wind up broke, well, I'll always remember that I had a swing in time. I'm gonna give it everything.
Well, the Magic Live 2015 convention is now in the history books. It was another great convention, and we're looking forward to the next one. Stan promises it looks like we're going to be having another one for the 25th anniversary of the magazine, which means it's going to be next year. That's 2016. And it's going to be August the 14th through the 17th. So that's going to be pretty darn exciting again. So mark your calendars. If you miss this year's, you don't want to be left out next year, because, as you know, they sold out for this year. So you want to make sure to get your reservation in time, because he's going to have even more surprises for us all next year. I want to thank all of you guys for listening to The Magic Word and for all these updates, and I appreciate all the kind words that you've said and sent me along the way, and the encouragement that I've seen on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and for all those guys who are not following me, please do. You can get me over there on most any social media. It's easy to find. Just go to the website. It's got all the information that you need. It was great seeing all the people and all the listeners. Certainly a lot of people who had come up and said that they enjoyed listening to the podcast all the time. Plus, it was great to run into a lot of the folks here who are friends of the Magic Word. That is, those who have made financial donations in order to keep the Magic Word going all the time. People like Steve Chesedey. There have been people, Peter J. Cook was there. Also, of course, Daniel Will. And so it was just great seeing these guys, and I appreciate the time. Oh, and Fred King. Can't forget you. Thanks a lot, Fred, very much for the scotch. Wanted to thank Daniel also for the breakfast. You guys are great. And thank you again for your continuing patronage. And for those of you who are not sure exactly what I'm talking about, be sure to go and check that out on the website then also. See how that you can help contribute to keeping the Magic Live free and on the air, so this way that everyone can enjoy this. And for any donation, whether you make a one-time donation or if you can make a monthly pledge, that's all the better to help defray all the production costs. costs are involved with this. And so I certainly appreciate all of the listeners as well, in particular for those who pledge their financial support. This has really been great. So anyhow, and by the way, I do want to, I mentioned Peter J. Cook, who is one of the new listeners, and I should say the Friends of the Magic Word, but we recently had someone who has joined, and I want to welcome Walter E. McGurn, who is a new Friend of the Magic Word. Thank you very much for joining, and you are on the Wall of Fame now, and he has made a financial pledge each month as well. And so if you are interested to find out more information, just go to patreon.com/themagicword. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/themagicword. And you can watch a video and learn more about how that you can help the magic word. Well, thank you guys very much for listening to all these podcasts, and I have not been getting too much sleep, but I certainly have been getting enough to eat. I had an opportunity to get over to In-N-Out Burger, and then there was another place down the street that I've been enjoying going to breakfast with some of my friends over there to called the Black Bear. Apparently that is a West Coast institution. I guess there are several dozen of these around the West Coast, but the first time I visited one, and golly, it is really good, particularly the Bear Claw waffle or something. It's a bear claw that's egg battered and deep fried, and it's got just sweet goodness written all over it, and probably 9,000 calories, but who's counting? So anyhow, I appreciate you guys tuning in and listening, and so till next time, and the next one, I'll give you a little preview right now, is going to be released next Thursday, and that will be with Tom Mullica. When we were in Jacksonville, I had a chance to sit down with him and to chat for a while, and I think you'll enjoy this roller coaster of a ride, emotional roller coaster, I should say, that we'll be having a chat with Tom Mullica, and that will be the next podcast. And then beyond that, it'll soon be time for the Texas Association of Magicians, and golly, that'll be another convention I'm going to, and you'll be hearing daily updates from that too. So be sure to subscribe to the Magic Word podcast and keep up to date on all of what's happening in the magic world. Oh, and one more thing, I would be remiss if I didn't thank Chris Kenner for hosting just a most elegant party, a lot of fun. My gosh, it was so much fun to rub shoulders with a bunch of other magicians, and it seemed like a mini convention over there. It was a microcosm of Magic Live. Whereas there were 1,600 people here at Magic Live, we had about 350 people over at Chris's house, I understand. So thank you, Chris Kenner, for throwing on a big bash, and it was just a ton of fun. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and viva Las Vegas. This is Scotty out.
Viva Las Vegas!